you today. So if you have yours, open it up. If you have the Bible app, turn to Daniel chapter 5. Daniel chapter 5. We continue through our series through this Old Testament prophet. If you were with us last week, you might remember we looked at, in Daniel chapter 4, we looked at an entry from King Nebuchadnezzar's personal journal. And we saw how God took a prideful and arrogant king and turned him into a madman who lived in the fields with the beasts. And it took him 7 years to look to heaven. He said he turned his eyes to heaven. I don't think that was the first time he actually looked up. I think that was the first time he actually looked up with his spiritual eyes to truly confess God for who he really is. In his own words, the Most High, whose dominion is everlasting and who does according to his will. That's Daniel 4, 35. 34 and 35. So when we get to chapter 5, nearly 25 years has passed since Nebuchadnezzar was king. History tells us that he died in 561. His only son took the throne. His name was Evil-Merodach, but was murdered by his brother-in-law. And after two more kings and one more murder, Nabonidus, who would be the last ruler of Babylon, became king and co-ruled with his son Belshazzar. Now, that's not to be confused with Daniel's Babylonian name, Belteshazzar, but both are giving references to the Babylonian god. Now, for a long time, people questioned the historic accuracy of Daniel because there was no record of a Belshazzar as king of Babylon, as mentioned here in verse 1 of chapter 5. But since the Nabonidus cylinders were uncovered by archaeologists, you can look it up. Not now, but later. Look it up. Nabonidus cylinders, they confirm what I've just told you, that Nabonidus was the king and he was co-regent. He ruled with his son, Belshazzar. So with that in mind, if you're able, please stand out of respect for the word as we read here in Daniel 5. Belshazzar, the king, made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in the presence of the 1,000. While he tasted the wine, Belshazzar gave the command to bring the gold and silver vessels which his father, or ancestor in this case, Nebuchadnezzar, had taken from the temple which had been in Jerusalem, that the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines might drink from them. Verse 4. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze and iron, wood and stone. Verse 5. In the same hour, the fingers of a man's hand appeared and wrote opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. The king's countenance changed, and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his hips were loosened, and his knees knocked against each other. The king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, the soothsayers. The king spoke, saying to the wise men of Babylon, "Whoever reads this writing and tells me its interpretation shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around his neck, and he shall be third ruler in the kingdom." Now all the king's wise men came, but they could not read the writing or make known to the king its interpretation. Verse 9. Then King Belshazzar was greatly troubled. His countenance was changed, and his lords were astonished. The queen, because of the words of the king and his lords, came to the banquet hall. The queen spoke, saying, "O king, live forever. Do not let your thoughts trouble you, nor let your countenance change. There is a man in your kingdom, in whom is the spirit of the holy God. And in the days of your father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father the king, made him chief of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers, inasmuch as an excellent spirit, knowledge, understanding, interpreting dreams, solving riddles, and explaining enigmas were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will give this interpretation." May the Lord bless the reading of his word. You can have a seat. So yet another very cool, kind of weird Bible story. And again, with all of these stories that we see throughout the Word, they're not just stories. I believe they really did happen. So we're going to just kind of look through this and see how we can apply it to our lives as we go through. So number one on your outline, if you're taking notes, we see a pagan party. A pagan party. That's what's going on here in verses 1 through 4. Now, this new king brought in 1,000 of his nobles. And the way I see it, he's kind of trying to impress them. The wine began to flow, And in an act of blasphemy and complete disregard for the one true God, Belshazzar said, hey, let's bring in those gold dishes. Now, these are the same golden dishes that Nebuchadnezzar took from the temple in Jerusalem. God had set them apart back in 1 Chronicles. He set them apart for use solely in his temple. But Belshazzar didn't care. And so you can imagine, for us, it would be like if somebody took our communion table and used it in some pagan frat party. That's what's going on here in Daniel. It was a complete disregard for the things of God. He was taking what God had consecrated and set apart and making it common. He was so deep in sin that he was blind to reality, because his kingdom, the great Babylon, is only hours from ending. See, that's what sin does to us. It's the next blanks on your outline. Sin blinds us from reality. We cannot see the impending fall. Sin blinds us from reality. We can't see what's coming. And it's in the midst of this scene that we see, number two, some weird writing. Some weird writing. Here is the wake-up call for the king. Right there in verse 5, the fingers of a man's hand appeared. And I don't know if it was some big, oversized hand, or if it was something like Thing from the Addams Family. I'm not sure, but whatever it was, did you hear the description? I mean, his hips were loose, his knees were knocking, he was so scared. His countenance changed. This was the hand of God, and nobody understood the writing. The same fingers of God defeated Pharaoh when he refused to let God's people go in Exodus 8:19. It was these same fingers that wrote the Ten Commandments on stone tablets in Exodus 31:10. Jesus said that he cast out demons by the finger of God in Luke 11:20. This king could not understand what was going on. So he called his wise men. Wise men is what we've been calling them throughout this study. Because we've seen they've already failed. Nebuchadnezzar trusted in them as part of his downfall. They already had two strikes, and they're about to strike out. Time after time after time, what the world has to offer does not help. It's the next blanks on your outline. What the world has to offer does not help. See, it's God that has a plan for your life. And only He can reveal the mysteries of that plan. And so we need to stop trying to find solutions for our lives in what the world has to offer. Pagan party, some weird writing. Number three, a semi-wise wife. A semi-wise wife. That's the queen here in verses 10 through 12. Guys, don't ever call your wife semi-wise. Okay, just a words of wisdom. See, everybody in the palace, they heard what was going on, including the queen, so she came to the banquet hall. Now, granted, she didn't have it all together. She's likely pagan as well. That's why I'm calling her semi-wise. She uses some flattery here, and she disregards the impending judgment. But it was her that remembered, hey, there's this guy named Daniel, and I think he can probably figure this thing out. So, a couple of applications. Let me talk to the guys, just first off. If you have a godly wife, you need to be thankful. You need to be thankful. Listen, I know in my own life, many times when I bring up a difficult situation, Jessica, my wise wife, will have a solution that I didn't even think of. And I think, well, doggone it, why didn't I think of that? But I'm thankful that I have a wise wife to go home to. Be thankful, guys, but also pay attention, because many times God will speak through the woman that we are closest to. So don't allow yourself to be deafened to the voice of God, because in pride, you won't listen because it came through your wife. Now, to all of the wives, the women in here, I don't claim to understand how your brain works. I'm not going there. Always thinking, no off switch, no lack of ideas, but here's what I do know. Nobody wants to be called semi-wise. Right? Oh yeah, she's semi-wise, but she's semi-dumb too. I mean, that's nobody wants that. So in order to be a wise wife, you got to plug in to the source of all wisdom, which is Jesus Christ. It is God and his word. And so this is an encouragement for you to continue to connect on a deeper level with God through his word. Not in a legalistic way, not in order to get to heaven, not in order to earn your way to heaven, but because you're going there through Jesus. And for all of you spiritually single women among us, meaning that you're the only believer in your marriage, remember, God calls you to be submissive to your husband, 1 Peter 3:1, but it reminds you to continue to live the life God has called you to, and many times your husband will take notice because of your conduct and come to faith. You want to talk about living on mission? You are right in the midst of it. So don't be discouraged and continue to connect to the source of all wisdom. A pagan party, some weird writing, a semi-wise wife. Number four, an intelligent interpretation. An intelligent interpretation. Let's continue the story, Daniel 5, 16 following. So Daniel was brought in. The king says, I've heard about you. All these other wise men can't help me. Verse 16. Now, if you can read the writing and make known to me its interpretation, you shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around your neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Then Daniel answered and said before the king, let your gifts be for yourself and give your reward to another. Yet I will read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation. O king, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar your father a kingdom and majesty, glory and honor. And because of this majesty that he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whomever he wished, he executed. Whomever he wished, he kept alive. Whomever he wished, he set up. And whomever he wished, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up, and his spirit was hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. Verse 21. Then he was driven from the sons of men. His heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with the wild donkeys. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew, we saw this several times last week, the Most High God rules in the kingdoms of men and appoints over it whomever he chooses. Verse 22, but you, his son, Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, although you knew all this, and you have lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your lords and your wives and your concubines have drunk wine from them, and you have praised the gods of silver and gold, bronze and iron, wood and stone, which do not see or hear or know, and the God who holds your breath in his hands and owns all your ways you have not glorified. Then the fingers of the hand were sent from him, and this writing was written. This is the inscription that was written. Mene, mene, tekel, upharsin. This is the interpretation of each word. Mene, God has numbered your kingdom, and it is finished. Verse 27, tekel, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Verse 28, Perez, your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Then Belshazzar gave the command, and they clothed Daniel with purple and put a chain of gold around his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be third ruler in the kingdom. Now, you may be familiar with the phrase, the handwriting was on the wall. It's sometimes used when a company is going under. They'll say, oh, the handwriting was on the wall. Or when a relationship is split up, we say the same thing. But whenever that is used, it means it's not going to end well. So look at these three words and hear what God may be speaking to us this morning. The first one is mene. Your days are numbered. Your days are numbered. Not a very comforting thing, really. But here's the deal. God says the same thing to each one of us. Psalm 139:16. In your book, they were all written, the days fashioned for me, when as yet there were none of them. See, God has already determined how many days you have to live. There is nothing you can do to change it because he is sovereign. In James 4:14, these days are described as a vapor. I mean, that is our life, a blip, a snap, a vapor, here one moment and gone the next. And that's why the psalmist wrote this in Psalm 90. The days of our lives are 70 years. If by reason of strength they are 80, verse 12, so teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Teach us to number our days. Lord, help me remember we don't get very many of them. See, anything that you think you have a lot of, you squander it. But if you know you don't have much of it, you guard it. If you have a lot of extra money, it's going to slip through your hands really quickly. But if you're running low on money, you're going to hold on to it. The same is true with our lives. We don't have very many days. And so we need to guard our lives from being influenced from the changing culture around us to make sure that we are living them for something that actually matters. What do you think? Are you living your life for something that actually matters? Are you living a life on mission for the gospel of Jesus? That's what really matters. See, the handwriting was on the wall for the king. He knew about Nebuchadnezzar. He knew how God brought him to the bottom, but he didn't heed the warning. I wonder how many warning signs God has given us in our lives to tell us, hey, listen, you're headed in the wrong direction. Many times in my life, I think it's a lack of peace, and this feeling that it's just spinning out of control, a sense of distance from God, just an unsettled feeling. Read the writing on the wall. God uses these things to get us to turn back to him in obedience. Like Belshazzar, God has given us bad examples for those who have come before us to warn us. Hey, listen, this is what happens when you exalt yourself. This is what happens when you start to hang out with the wrong people. This is what happens when you choose a lifestyle contrary to what God has for you. This is what happens when you allow greed to take over. Don't go down the same path. Don't ignore the signs. It seems some people got to learn the hard way, don't we? Genesis 6:3, God told Noah, "My spirit will not strive with man forever." And we know that God is long-suffering, he is patient, but even still, eventually he will allow the consequences of our actions to play out in order to get us to turn back to him. What does "your days are numbered" speak to you? The next one, Tekel, your life is out of balance. Your life is out of balance. Now, this may be true in a couple of ways for us. Sometimes our busy schedules are too full. Sometimes we have our kids involved in too many things. If a sport or hobby becomes consistently more important than the things of God, your life is out of balance. If you're working so much that you don't have time for your family, your life is out of balance. If your nose is constantly in a device or screen, your life is out of balance. See, this happens in our physical lives, but it also happens in our spiritual lives as well. Think about near the end of the Sermon on the Mount, what Jesus spoke. Listen to these disturbing words. Matthew 7:21. "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, 'Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" Now, for a really long time, these verses, I mean, they weigh heavy. I don't know about you, but even still, because I don't want to be one of these days, one that said, Jesus says to, "I never knew you." How do we keep from it? We keep our lives in balance. See, these people talking to Jesus, they had prophesied. That's a good thing. That's a godly thing. They had cast out demons. That's a good and godly thing. They had done many wonders in Jesus' name. Again, good and godly thing, but their lives were out of balance. They were trusting in all of these good and godly things that they had done to earn their way to heaven. But God clearly tells us it doesn't work that way. There are none righteous. Our righteousness is like filthy rags. None of us will ever be good enough to gain salvation on our own. We must trust in the righteousness of Christ, the perfect Lamb of God, alone to get us there. Next blank's on your outline. The only thing that will balance out God's judgment is the righteousness of Christ. The only thing that will balance out God's judgment is the righteousness of Christ. So again, I ask, is your life out of balance? Is your schedule so full that these activities are pushing out the things of God? And most importantly, have you trusted in your own righteousness to earn salvation? Do you trust in doing good and godly things to get you there when in reality, in your current state, one of these days, Jesus is going to look at you and say, "I never knew you. most terrible day that will be. Days are numbered. Your life is out of balance. Letter C, Perez, your kingdom is divided. Your kingdom is divided. Now, you may notice the word Perez is used here in verse 28, but eupharson was used in verse 25. Eupharson is the plural of Perez. Both mean the same thing. Your kingdom is divided. That's exactly what's going to happen. Remember back in chapter 2, the great statue of King Nebuchadnezzar, that King Nebuchadnezzar saw in his dream. The head of gold was Babylon, and then came the divided kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. So if this were a movie, this would be the backstory, because as this conversation was taking place, the army of the Medes and Persians had surrounded the city. Belshazzar ignored the warning signs. He let pride go unchecked, and this led to number 5, a final fall. A final fall. Verse 30 and 31. That very night, Belshazzar, king of Chaldeans, was slain. And Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. So here's the rest of the backstory. We know that the walls of Babylon were some 380 feet high. They had gates of bronze. These kings, when they sat in their kingdoms, they felt pretty safe. But history tells us that the Medo-Persian army went upstream and diverted the Euphrates River that ran through the city so that they were able to go under the gate where water usually flowed. 2,557 years ago, this coming Friday, Babylon fell. See, when God says it's going to happen, it's going to happen. I wonder what warning signs he's given you. What writing is on the wall for you? Man, these last 2 weeks have hit the issue of pride. There must be some among us, myself included, that need to hear this message. You allow God to search your heart. As our musicians and prayer partners come, if you're new with us this morning, we like to answer two questions. What has God said to you? And what are you going to do about it?